From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 23rd day of February 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office for the afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets. However, we will hear from Frayne Olson. This is a conversation I held with him about a week ago, as it's related to the commodity markets and how the fundamentals have changed and what that might mean for corn and soybean prices going forward, and how the North Dakota State University agricultural economist sees the marketplace laying out in the coming year. We'll do all of that right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Before we get started, a quick reminder to purchase your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It's not next Tuesday, but the following one, the 5th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Time is now running short. Buy your tickets today at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu for this event. It is a fantastic day with the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, the Farm Doc team, the ag panelist from right here at willag.org, those that you hear on a regular basis during the closing market report and the opening market report, and many other folks for the day. The whole of the agenda is online at willag.org. Tickets are just $40.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Frayne Olson now joins us from North Dakota State University. He's at NDSU in Fargo. Hi, well, thanks for being with us, Frayne. I'd like to start with a conversation that you and I had maybe in 2016, could have been as late as 2017, though I don't know that the timing matters so much at this point. At that point in time, there was a seasonality to soybean pricing in the state, which meant that if farmers were to harvest the soybeans, not have anything really marketed, and just waited, that they would see a dollar appreciation in the basis, meaning basis would jump a dollar compared to the futures market. And I'm wondering if that's still the case.
So yes and no. We still do have a pretty strong seasonal pattern. We tend to see the lows of the basis levels right at harvest, obviously, because that's the highest inflow of grain. And one of the things that a lot of the, so back up, the about historically about 70% of the soybeans grown in this region end up going to export out of the PNW. And so we're very, very export dominant. And when you look at the seasonal patterns for U.S. soybean exports, you know, when, at what time of year do we ship exports? Ship soybeans, whether it be out of the Gulf or whether it be out of PNW, that has a very, very strong seasonal pattern, and so our basis levels follow that. A lot of the elevators in the region, understanding this basis pattern, have also tried to book freight, because most of it goes out on a shuttle train out to the PNW, and we have large volumes coming in right at harvest. And so as a farm manager, if you're forward pricing, trying to forward price for, let's say, mid-season for delivery at harvest, you can get some pretty good basis levels. But if you haven't priced anything, by the time you hit that harvest market, you know, there is quite a significant depreciation or dropping of the basis levels to incentivize at least putting some of that grain in the bin and then pulling it out later to be able to manage the flow of product. And so, yes, as we get out of that harvest season, as we find a home for all of the bushels, we tend to have a pretty nice, significant, steady increase in the basis to try and, again, incentivize moving that grain back out of the bin and into the supply chains because of that tight window. And usually by the time we get into this old early to mid-February time period, our basis levels are starting to drop off again because that export market out of the PNW specifically is starting to slow. It's not that you can't make some better sales if there's a recovery in the futures market, but if you're playing the basis game, that seasonal basis pattern has been very, very strong in the past. Now, moving forward, some of that is starting to change. As we get more crush capacity up here in the Northern Plains, you know, the crushers, just like an ethanol plant, obviously need to have product flowing in on a continuous basis year-round. And so what we're seeing is because of the crush demand and the fact that they need to have product flowing on a continual basis, we're starting to see that basis pattern shifting. The pattern is still there, but the highs aren't quite as high and the lows aren't quite as low. So we're seeing more of a stability occurring. So the timing of the pattern hasn't shifted, but the kind of the amplitude or the highs and lows aren't as broad as we said, as we've seen before, because again, the local demand is trying to make sure that they capture a portion of that product flow. So again, the pattern is there, but not as exaggerated as what we've seen in the past.
I do want to talk as well about just farmer marketing, and maybe more broadly, this is likely to include corn. When soybeans broke through $12 and corn had been drifting for a long time, I think that was the seventh week in a row for both that they had closed lower. That $12 area just seemed, while it was a 15-cent drop on that Friday, psychologically felt almost disastrous because you were hopeful, or the market, the farmers, were hopeful that soybeans could manage to lift the marketplace, and it took the wind out of the sails. And things changed as well because, you know, there are bills due on March 1, and a lot of pressure came into the marketplace. I think it went from worry to possibly a little panic. Did that happen in your part of the world?
Yes, definitely. I've had a pretty heavy travel schedule over the last couple of months, so I've had a lot of face-to-face meetings with farmers, and I could certainly sense that anxiety level starting to increase pretty rapidly. And over the last couple of weeks, it's especially on corn, but even on soybeans now, it's gotten to a point where people are getting very nervous. And the concern, and this is, I know not only myself, but other marketing analysts have been talking about watching the South American weather, what's the size of the South American crop for both soybeans and corn. You know, we've had some challenges and issues show up in the Brazilian crop, in particular for soybeans, which is usually one of those triggers where if we start seeing some problems there, we start to see some lift or some turning points, if you will, within the U.S. markets. And this year, we just really haven't seen that. And what I'm trying to do is caution people is yes, we're having some challenges. There are some issues showing up in the South American crop. That's obviously changing some of the mentality. But those have not really turned into or translated into U.S. export sales. And historically, if there was a problem, again, in South America, you know, the challenge was, well, if they can't buy it from South America, there will likely be some international buyers, China particularly, but also other international buyers that will come in and try and get some short-term coverage. They were planning to buy out of the South American crop. If it's not as large as they think it's going to be, they come back to the U.S. and buy some more from the U.S. to make sure that they have their product flow that they need. And that's also one of the things, as we've talked about with logistics and ocean freight and transportation and being able to get vessels delivered on time, there was this concern, well, if there are going to be this supply chain disruptions, will they come to the U.S.? Will international buyers come to the U.S. and buy some more to be able to take that coverage? And so far, we just haven't seen it. And even though we've had some positive news show up in the market, it just hasn't had that impact on the futures market. So we continue to see this drifting lower. And in my view, from my perspective, I guess that has been one of my trigger points. One of the things that I have been looking for very closely to say, are these lower prices at a level now where the U.S. is not only competitive relative to other suppliers, but also then that we can deliver on time. And so that these international buyers come in and buy U.S. product, not necessarily deferring their purchases or delaying those purchases, waiting for some other supplier. So that is one of those not only psychological triggers, but also one of those fundamental triggers that I'm watching for. So when will these lower prices actually translate into export sales? And those, in my opinion, for corn in particular, but also for soybeans, will be that thing that I'm watching for very, very closely. And hopefully that will give us in this turning point, we'll get the low in the market, and we'll have at least a partial rebound to be able to move some more grain through the system.
So why haven't they, to the point that you and I are talking on this Tuesday, the 13th day of February, why haven't they at this point reached that level yet? Is it just that there's enough
Yeah, and part of that, I do think part of that has been the carryover from, or the supplies from last year's production. So last year, when you look at Argentina, had some significant problems. So again, the third year of basically continuous drought. This year, obviously, that drought has been broken. They're having a much better crop. But last year, Brazil had this monster soybean crop, and they had a very, very strong corn crop, which meant that their export season, they were able to extend that with old crop sales. So that shortened the window for U.S. export markets. And yes, we have been filling the gap in some particular countries. We've been able to fill that. But because of the aggressive sales, and I do think that international buyers then have been purchasing for delivery later in the season to get that coverage level. So they're buying more aggressively. They're buying further into the future, which means now those deliveries are coming up shortly. So as we get into now this harvest season for South America again, in particular for soybeans, that gap, that window between when old crop was basically sold out versus when the new crop inventory is hitting the marketplace is relatively short, particularly for soybeans, but even for corn. And so that gap that we as the United States typically fill in between there is narrow enough that, you know, they're not being that aggressive. They're not terribly concerned or worried about the deliveries for that new crop grain yet. So, well, again, I'm waiting to see if that attitude changes and see if we do get some U.S. picks up some more export sales.
Kudos to our regular Wednesday analyst, Greg Johnson from TGM of Total Grain Marketing. As we were going through August into September, all the way into October, we talked about that gap not being there or not being as big, so that they had extended the South American export season right into the U.S. harvest season or deeper into it. And I guess on the back end then, if we get the harvest have gotten the harvest out of both Argentina and Brazil, that just the length of time which was available for exports out of the United States meant that we exported fewer bushels, and that our export ability remains very high, but that the price just hasn't allowed that to happen. And is some of that logistics simply on the way the market works to move and allocate the ships that are available to move grain?
There is some of that, yes. So one of the things from a logistics standpoint we're watching, of course, is when we think about the movement of grain, we really need to think about the supply of bulk ocean freight. So it's those ships that are designed to haul bulk freight. And that includes grain, but it also includes things like iron ore or coal or other bulk products, right? So the grain complex, just like using rail transportation, has to compete against these other uses for the same kind of vessels. Well, with the challenges we're facing now in the Red Sea, where some of those vessels that are hauling grain as well as other products, instead of going through the Red Sea and going through the Indian Ocean, which is kind of a shortcut for a lot of the Black Sea wheat, as well as some of the Black Sea corn, as well as some of the European grains, those vessels are now having to go around the southern tip of Africa. And so that's adding about 2 weeks to the transit times. And it's just like having, you know, truck drivers in the middle of harvest. Well, if they have construction zone, they got to go around and reroute past the construction zone. It slows up the whole system. Okay, so it's part of it is the cost is going up, but part of it is also the turnaround time to be able to get that vessel from where it's being loaded to where it needs to be unloaded, in particular into those Asian markets. And so the question has been, well, if there are some delivery shortfalls or if there's some time delays, is it possible that people will come in and international buyers will come in and buy some more U.S. products because in particular out of the PNW, because of that shorter haul or that shorter distance going from the PNW ports back into the Asian markets? And again, we just have not seen that happen yet. So it seems as though the supply chain is working well enough that the end users are getting what they need. Again, that might change very quickly, but it right now we just haven't seen it. It hasn't translated into those sales that we're really looking for.
Because China is the largest user of soybeans on the planet, taking the primary bulk of the exports from the United States, I believe also from China, from Brazil, mm-hmm. how much does what we're seeing have to do with their economy?
Actually, a relatively large portion, in my opinion. So if you look at some long-term trends, you know, in particular for soybeans, it's most dramatic for soybeans. When you look at the volume of soybean imports and the rate of change, how quickly has that demand base for soybeans into China, has that grown over time? It's been almost a straight line for 15, almost 20 years. But over about the last 5 years or so, it's still increasing, right? The amount they're buying is still increasing, but that rate of change, that growth rate has really started to slow. It's starting to kind of flatten out. Now, I do think it'll continue to expand. It's just not going to be at the rate that we've seen for, you know, for the last 15 or 20 years. And there's two pieces to that. Part of it is, yes, their economy is not growing as quickly, which, again, as your economy gets bigger, your rate of growth starts to slow. It's just harder to add, you know, double-digit growth on a very, very large number. But the other challenge they're running into is they do have this population problem. They also have some of the worker challenges or employment challenges, the workforce issues that we do here in the U.S. And when you have those workforce issues, your economy starts to slow. Well, combine a slower growth in your economy with a livestock sector, in particular hogs, that's also not growing as fast. They're battling some challenges with African swine fever, even though it's better now, it's still not completely under control. They have changed some of their production systems. They have changed some of their feeding programs. They still need a large volume of soybean and soybean meal, but that growth rate has slowed, okay? But the growth rate in production out of Brazil and Argentina, primarily out of Brazil, has really not slowed yet. And so when we think about that differential, the amount of soybeans that need to be purchased from the United States relative up to other sources, you know, that just even the volumes are starting to drop. So it's not only a seasonality problem. You have the large crop from last year that shortens our export window, but just the fact that in particular Brazil is able to supply larger volumes than they have in the past makes a difference. So yes, some of this is a longer term, not necessarily short term, but longer term. Some of that is the growth rate in the Chinese economy and the growth rate then in their livestock sector, primarily in pork, but also in poultry.
I have two other questions, one on corn and one on soybeans, but I do want to come to corn before I get to the soybean question.
Sure.
On corn, as we talked about earlier, the exports were what you were hoping and looking for to see, to find a bottom, a place to get a lift out of the marketplace. That Safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil is just going into the ground, so there's a lot of time yet there. Are there other reasons, for instance, why Mexico's maybe not in the marketplace as large? And can you see those exports picking up at some point? And does that happen in the middle of the planting season? And how problematic is that?
Boy, a lot of pieces to unpack there.
Right.
So when we think about, you know, who are the large buyers of U.S. corn? And traditionally, Mexico has been our number one customer. Okay, and when we look at the trends for Mexican buying for U.S. corn, that we have seen a growth rate. Now, last year we were off a little bit, primarily because they had a larger crop, they had a better production season last year, and also our corn prices are much higher. Now, this year, the opposite is happening. The Mexicans had a shorter corn crop. Their crop wasn't as large. They had some pretty large crop areas in the core corn producing region, so they need to purchase more corn. But also now our corn prices are lower. So if you look at the demand base out of Mexico, that's one of the reasons we're having a reasonably good export season right now is because of that. When we look at some of our other core buyers of corn, like Japan, some going into Europe, some going to some of the South Asian countries, again, those are relatively stable markets for us. They when the price is high or price is low, they buy about the same amount every year. The swing vote for our export sales has always been China. When they have a growing demand base, or if they have their corn crop isn't as large as they thought it was going to be, or they have some production issues, they can come into the global market in kind of a big way. And that's always kind of our swing vote. If we have a really good export system, it's because not only are we selling to our traditional customers, we add that demand base to the Chinese market. Well, this last year, China's corn production was pretty good. And so China is the second largest corn producer in the world. The United States is the largest when it comes to total bushels produced, but China's number two. Okay, so they had a pretty good corn crop. They did have some quality issues. But the total volumes available are very strong. And then you add on to that, again, pretty good corn crop from last year in Brazil. And that's one of the reasons we're having a little bit softer. Okay, so moving forward, you're absolutely right. The safrinha crop is the larger of the two corn crops. We also have to remember that the safrinha crop is primarily grown in the north, and they do have some logistical challenges in the corn if it's grown in the northern regions to a port facility. They can do it. There's some of that corn is exportable stocks. A larger portion of the corn that's exportable that can easily hit the international market is actually the first crop corn, which will be starting harvest now relatively soon. So from a buyer standpoint, they're saying, well, when will that first crop corn start hitting the market? Much closer to their major export terminal. It's much easier to get it filled onto an ocean going vessel. Are there things moving forward that can change that? The size of the safrinha crop is important just because it is such a dominant production time period. They're in the process of planting right now. Planting progress is a little bit ahead of normal. They've had some rain showers to be able to get enough soil moisture to get the crop in the ground and the crop growing. But they have not had enough rain to recharge their subsoil moisture yet. And so the corn crop is looking okay right now, but there is this concern, you know, they're going to be living kind of rain shower to rain shower until they make sure that they have the production they need. So there are some things happening in the safrinha crop that could change people's attitudes, that could shift more of that demand base to the United States. The other obviously key question that we're going to be talking about very, very shortly is what do we do with corn plantings here in the U.S. and what kind of crop conditions we can have, which is our normal kind of thought process and how many bushels are going to be filled. So the safrinha crop is going to be a little bit ahead of the U.S. crop, usually about 1 to 2 months sooner than we will be here in the U.S. So again, there will be some things we're going to be watching. Key is, will that actually translate into export sales and purchases?
Brian Olson is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension. I'm Todd Gleason.